Two very short things before we begin. One is, had a little conversation with our head pujari here, and she was sharing something that I always think about, but hearing it directly from the pujari, wanted to share it with you. Radha Damodar really liked kirtan. So part of the magic of kirtan in Gita Nagari is Radha Damodar really liked kirtan. Even the doors closed, they like kirtan. So we feel happiness because they feel happiness. And it's a very special happiness because the history of Radha Damodar is a long history, but it's filled with kirtan. Like from the very beginning, and then Vishnu John era, and then here we are. They like kirtan, we have kirtan, they feel great happiness, we feel a special happiness. I just wanted to share that. We're very fortunate to be engaged in the process of hearing and chanting in the presence of Radha Damodar. Very fortunate. There are some people that think, oh, we've been to the retreats in Gita Nagari, what else is new? Been there, done that. What else is new? And I feel that each time, I've been coming here for more years than a lot of years. You know, ministrations have come and gone, and trees have fallen, and ages have passed, and it's being in kirtan with Radha Damodar is very special. Being in Gita Nagari with all the devotees in Radha Damodar's presence is very special. Confirmed. The second thing is, as I expressed yesterday morning, please take part in the relationship building exercise that we have called Maha Cleanup, or whatever, you know. After lunch, there's a period in the schedule for devotees to do service together. Please be present, you know, on time. We'll end on time too. We'll end on time. We should start on time. And it's a nice opportunity to serve Krishna together. Put Krishna in the center and do service together. Please be present for that part of the schedule. Okay, so chant together the verse from, this is the fourth of the Chatur Shloki verses, the four principal verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. That's our verse for this morning. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So it's 2:9:36. And it has a very long purport, but we're just going to read part of it. Jigyasyam Tattva Jigyasanatmanah Tanvaya Vyatrika Bhyam Yatsyat Sarvatra Sarvada. Etavat to this. Eva. Certainly. Jigyasyam. Is to be inquired. Tattva. The absolute truth. Jigyasuna. By the student. Atmanaha. Of the self. Anvaya. may be.
It may be.
Sarvatra.
Sarvatra.
In all space and time.
In all space and time.
Sarvada.
Sarvada.
In all circumstances. Very strong verse. Translation. A person who is searching after the supreme, absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, most certainly search for it up to this in all circumstances, in all space and time, both directly and indirectly. Kind of like checkmate. There isn't an exception. Time, place, circumstance, all times, all places, all circumstances, directly and indirectly. The Chatur Shloki verses of the Bhagavatam are naturally addressing the absolute truth. And the absolute truth, according to the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, is that from which everything comes. Whatever that is, that's the absolute truth. One should search out that in whatever you do, wherever you are, etc. All circumstances, directly, indirectly, in all circumstances. So I'm just going to read a few paragraphs from the purport. In the Bhagavad Gita it is stated that if one can serve the Lord by offering the results of one's work, it does not matter what one does. Generally, men say that whatever they are doing is inspired by God. Heard that one. But that is not all. One should actually work on behalf of God as a servant of God. The Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita 9:27, Yat karoshi yat asnasi yat jahosi dadasi yat yat tapasyasi kaunteya tat kurashva madarpanam. Do whatever you like, or whatever may be easier for you to do. Eat whatever you may eat. Sacrifice whatever you can sacrifice. Give whatever you may give in charity, and do whatever you may undertake in penance. But everything must be done for Him only. If you do your business, or if you accept some employment, do so on behalf of the Lord. Whatever you may eat, you may offer the same to the Lord and be assured that He will return the food after eating it. He is the complete whole, and therefore whatever He may eat as offered by the devotee is accepted because of the devotee's love. But again, it is returned as prasad for the devotee so that he can be happy by eating. In other words, be a servant of God and live peacefully in that consciousness, ultimately returning home back to Godhead. And then a little further down, it is enjoined in Srimad Bhagavatam 2:3:10, famous verse. Akama sarvakamo va moksha kama udarati tibrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. Though a person be full of desires or have no desires, he may follow this path of infallible bhakti yoga for complete perfection. One need not be anxious to propitiate each and every demigod and goddess, because the root of all of them is the personality of Godhead, as by pouring water on the root of the tree. One serves and enlivens all the branches and leaves. So, by rendering service unto the Supreme Lord, one actually serves every god and goddess without extraneous effort. The Lord is all-pervading, and therefore service unto Him is also all-pervading. Another little section, and that's it for the purport. This is the indirectly, directly and indirectly. So, similarly, it is indicated indirectly in various places in revealed scriptures. Gives a list of six things. One, even though one is well-versed in all the Vedas and scriptures, if one is not a devotee of the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, he is considered to be the lowest of mankind. Doesn't sound so indirectly to me. It sounds pretty direct. Two, in the Garuda Purana, Brihannaradiya Purana, and Padma Purana, the same is repeated. What is the use of Vedic knowledge and penance for one who is devoid of devotional service to the Lord? Three, what is the comparison to thousands of Prajapatis to one devotee of the Lord? Four, Shukadeva Goswami said, Bhagavatam 2.4.17, that neither the ascetic nor one who is greatly munificent, nor one who is famous, nor the great philosopher, nor the great occultist, nor anyone can achieve the desired result without being engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. Five, even if a place is more glorious than heaven, if there is no glorification of the Lord of Vaikuntha or his pure devotee, it should be at once quitted. There's a lot of vacancies in this world. Number six, the pure devotee refuses to accept all the five different kinds of liberation in order to be engaged in the service of the Lord. Last paragraph. The final conclusion, therefore, is that the glories of the Lord must be always and everywhere proclaimed. One should hear about His glories. One should chant about His glories. And one should always remember His glories, because that is the highest perfectional stage of life. As far as fruitive work is concerned, it is limited to an enjoyable body. As far as yoga is concerned, it is limited to the acquirement of mystic power. As far as empiric philosophy is concerned, it is limited to the attainment of transcendental knowledge. As far as transcendental knowledge is concerned, it is limited to attainment of salvation. Even if they are adopted, there is every chance of discrepancies in discharging the particular type of functions. But adoption of the transcendental devotional service of the Lord has no limit, nor is there any fear of falling down. The process automatically reaches the final stage by the grace of the Lord. In the preliminary stage of devotional service, there is an apparent requisite for knowledge. But in the higher stage, there is no necessity of such knowledge. The best and guaranteed path of progress is, therefore, engagement in bhakti yoga, pure devotional service. I mean, the purport is like 12 pages. This is just a sample. So the title that I chose to speak on this morning is Time Management 101, : Balance. I chose that in part because it's one of the top five questions I'm asked all the time. how do we strike the balance between our duties and our devotion? And it also flows from the other two classes that I personally gave. What is time? And what are the injunctions and prohibitions? And then, so how do we navigate complexity? Because there's so many demands on our time, and everybody knows what complexity is about, because we live in a world like that. So many demands upon our time. So just try to keep it simple and then elaborate on some simple points. the view, like really simple, to say balance is something that enters into the picture when you have a what's called the secular view. Like there's things that I do that's worldly, and there's things that I do that's devotional. And how do I make the balance between things that are worldly and things that are devotional? Just a little anecdotal story about this. Very early in the Hare Krishna movement, by the presence of the devotees in Boston, a professor of the Harvard Divinity School named Harvey Cox, a Christian theologian, became very interested in Krishna consciousness. And it chronologically, it happened shortly after one of his books that was a popular book. It was called Secular City, C-I-T-Y, Secular City. And in the book, Harvey Cox was, as a Harvard professor can do, placing in choice words his dismay that Christianity had become secular. Not only the government is secular in terms of government as separation of church and state. That's a secular government. The government can't be involved in affairs of religion. Religion can't be entered into the affairs of the government because historically, at least in Europe, it had made things very corrupt. Both became corrupted. So separation of church and state. That's secular government. Secular religion similarly views this is what my worldly duties are, and this is what my duties to God are. And a classic example of this from Christian teaching, which he presents in his book, but I also am familiar with because I grew up in that tradition. When the people that were the government people were trying to get Christ in a box, so he would do something wrong and they could punish him. There was an issue where Peter, among the principal disciples of Christ, was Peter, who was a fisherman. So he caught a fish, and in the fish was a coin, a gold coin. I don't know why fish eat gold coins, but this fish ate a gold coin. And when he, cut open the fish and he found the gold coin, the tax collector came to Peter's home and asked him, "Who does the gold coin belong to? Does it belong to Caesar or does it belong to God?" And then the question went to Christ, and his answer was, "Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, render unto God what is God's." That was a cool answer. They didn't get him in a box for that one. And the tax collector took the gold coin. I don't know why either, besides he's stronger and the other is weaker. But what belongs to, what's from a religious perspective, There's your duties to state and family and society, and then there's duties to God. And over time, Harvey Cox's book was saying, Christianity had become secularized. And one of the things that he greatly appreciated about the Hare Krishna movement and Bhagavad Gita is that it's not secular. Now things have evolved very nicely where it's now become an issue again. What, you know, so how much for God and how much for my worldly duties? So let's do the reset and say, this isn't, Bhagavad Gita's teaching is not a secular teaching. If you live your life according to Bhagavad Gita, it's not that, that distinction is an artificial distinction. Or you're not reading Bhagavad Gita properly if you're thinking like that. Perhaps we're molded by the culture in which we're living, where secularism is the culture in which we're living. But Vedic culture is not a secular culture. It's everything for Krishna. Just as this verse of the Bhagavatam is saying, Anvayat, directly, and vyatiye kabhyam, indirectly. Sarvatra sarvada, in all times and circumstances, in all places and times and all circumstances. When is it appropriate to search out the absolute truth? The answer is always. So separately, you know, how do you balance between always? There's no balance. Or a little phrase that I've adopted is the one pocket program. Some of you know that phrase. So how do I spend my time? Or when I receive something, you know, there's my pocket and there's Krishna's pocket. You know, me, me, Krishna, Krishna. And the devotional teaching is there's only one pocket, it's Krishna. And from that one pocket, say in terms of time or in terms of the results of your activity or in terms of searching, so the first word is up to this, kind of a mysterious phrase, up to this, up what's this? This is the other three verses. All of this, what the other three verses said, is it's always in all circumstances the absolute, searching for the absolute truth. Connecting with the personality of Godhead. That's our mission. That's the human form of life's mission. That's what we've been awarded this body for that purpose. So that's the first point. The balance is everything goes to Krishna. So now, how does that work in practical terms? Because aside from a soul, we have a body and we have a mind. The body has its needs, and at least we think that our mind has its needs. And we think that our mind has its needs not in terms of Krishna. We think we have those needs. So, we can't, you know, in other words, we could always think of Krishna, but, you know, the mind has its propensity to think of other things besides thinking of Krishna. So, what do we do? So, a little bit, if I may, just this question last night about crossword puzzles, and you know, one can utilize something like that to build your vocabulary and things like that. So I gave, you know, just read Srimad Bhagavatam. Here's a practical application. There was a recent circumstance where a devotee somewhere in America, a teenage student, they're getting really good grades in all subject matters, but they felt, and the guidance counselor and their teachers felt, they needed to improve their vocabulary. So I was asked, what do you recommend? They like reading Srimad Bhagavatam, but in this particular individual's case, I said, Rabindra Swarup Prabhu is such an excellent writer, and his use of language is, it's awesome. So I requested Rabindra Swarup Prabhu's secretary. He's perhaps our best writer in ISKCON. I mean, many persons feel like that. So his secretary, Shraddha Devi Dasi, I asked her, please compile, here's the assignment. Find essays or things that Rabindra Swarup Prabhu has written that would help this young devotee improve their vocabulary at the same time. So without crossword puzzles, it's, you know, subject matter that points to Krishna. For audiences that, you know, the Back to Godhead readership is kind of like a very general audience. And you may have to, like, keep a dictionary by your side and then look up the word and see how you apply the word in context, because crossword puzzles aren't in context, it's abstract. Besides, it doesn't lead to thought of Krishna. So if it's in context and it leads to thought of Krishna, keep your dictionary and read your very brilliant writer's writing. I didn't suggest, here's a whole series of articles by Bhaktisiddhanta. When she goes to graduate school, we'll give her that assignment. But Bhaktisiddhanta's language surpasses those of us who have English as our first language. And Prabhupada said that hearing Bhaktisiddhanta speak, he had difficulty understanding him. And that was in Bengali. I've given some things that Bhaktisiddhanta had written in Bengali to some Bengalis, and they said, this is like Sanskrit. So, how to connect, so this is balance, time management, 101 is, how do we make a balance between these things? So it's everything for Krishna. And then practically, so we'll speak a little bit. I don't know how many others have already used these examples, but that's okay. I can say them again if they've already been spoken. One of Prabhupada's phrases is, from spiritual well-being, material well-being follows like a shadow. You've heard that one before? From spiritual well-being. So it's like the sun is coming through the window, and there's a body sitting right here in the front row, and there's a shadow being cast on the floor. And as the object moves, the shadow moves. The object casts the shadow because there's the light. So we don't need to adjust the shadow, we need to adjust the object. And the object is the spiritual well-being. It takes care of the material well-being. So, on the matter of time management or, you know, making a balance, make sure, and I've spoken on this in the past week to three different people, you know, some adults and some students. How do I manage my time? Make sure that the spiritual foundation is very strong. If you remember from the discussion, first day's discussion, time works differently according to our consciousness. It's the same energy, but it acts differently according to our regard for Krishna. So if the regard for Krishna is strong, make that strong foundation by hearing and chanting, strong foundation, like this example of a glass jar with a number of rocks, the big ones and the medium ones and the small ones and the pebbles and the sand. The big rocks go in first. So in our life, our day, the balance is put the big rock in first, or rocks, that the hearing and chanting activities, that goes in first. And then that will act to spiritualize all the other things that go into our day. And when we spiritualize all the things that go into our day, we will find we'll have more time. Probably every one of us have experienced this, but I remember experiencing it like really strongly with just when I first started practicing Krishna consciousness. I was wondering as a student, how am I going to do this? My day is full, and they're talking about 16 rounds. Everybody knows this one. How am I going to do it? And we all have a similar experience. It's somehow, I'm going to do it. What happened when you decided to do it? You had the time. And means, like the discussion last night about, I was at least one of the applications was deity worship, but whatever it is, you know, you're doing something and it takes more time than you really have time for. But if you're very Krishna conscious, then you can do things unless Krishna gives the ability. And it's not like passionate rushing through something to do something. It's just you're present instead of absent. And Krishna is present instead of distant. And the activity gets done more nicely, more satisfyingly, and then you have more time because you moved closer to eternal time and further away from wasting time and distracted consciousness while doing something. Be fully Krishna conscious. Strive for being fully present in everything that you do. Just like this in the purport. Yad karoshi, yad asnasi, so like that. Whatever it is that you do. And the verse that precedes that verse, it's not just give the results to Krishna, but it's even more. It's do the activity for Krishna. That give the results to Krishna is the motivation of I don't want entanglement in the reactions for the results of my activities by being attached to them. So I'll detach from the results of the activities and give the results to Krishna. And I may not be so devoted to Krishna, it's just like utilitarian. I'll give the results over there so I don't get entangled in the results, but I have certain deeds, so I'll do things that way. But a deeper sense of devotion is you do each thing for Krishna. So the verse that precedes yad karoshi, yad asnasi, yad jahosi, dadasi yat is the verse where Krishna speaks about making offerings of patram, pushpam, palam, toyam, fruit, flower, leaf, or water. You offer with love tad aham bhakti uparatam. If you offer with love and devotion, ashnami prayatatmanaha. Ashnami, from Krishna's side, he accepts. And from whom does he accept? Prayatatmaha, from one who is in pure consciousness. Ashnami prayatatmanaha. So this is a lesson in balance. Make your offerings with real devotion, and that offering principle applies to everything, not just when you're offering bhoga to the deity, or just when you're chanting your japa, or just when you're reading Srimad Bhagavatam and discussing Srimad Bhagavatam in the company of others, but it's everything that you do. When you walk out the door and put your shoes on, and when you go to take breakfast, or you know, whatever you go, get in your car and you're going back to your home, and you're the next day you're going to work, and everything that you do, Taraham Bhakti Uparatam Ashnami Prayatatmanaha. It's the one pocket program. It's everything is meant for Krishna's service. So that's a nice principle. But how do you apply it? It's not difficult to apply. It's difficult because the paradigm of life, which we're so familiar with, has this secularism or division. And we're trying to find the time for devotion to Krishna. So the first point was, it's not just our hearing and chanting, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, that's devotional service, and then the rest is over there. Over there becomes spiritualized by the hearing and chanting. And a very nice example of this, very nice, like a classic, is Lord Brahma after Lord Brahma achieves spiritual perfection, he sees the personality of Godhead. He realizes his spiritual identity, his swarup, his spiritual form, his relationship with Krishna, and he offers these beautiful prayers that we recite regularly. Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. After all of that, he expresses to Krishna, because it's in this case it's Krishna, because the second Gayatri mantra that he received was from Krishna's flute. That's a pretty nice way to receive Gayatri mantra. How would you like to be initiated by hearing the sound of Krishna's flute, and from out of your mouth comes Gayatri mantra? That's Brahma is up there. So he's speaking to Krishna, and he has a doubt. This kind of secular doubt. There's my devotion to you, but then there's also this material desire. How can you have a material desire after all of that? Well, I want to create a universe. It's involvement with matter. So those final five verses of Sri Brahma Samhita, they're wonderful. Please read them and read them again and again and let it sink in, because this secular view of, balance between this and that is real. There's a spiritual answer. And it's right in Sri Brahma Samhita. I'm going to read just three verses, starting with text 59. I'll read it slowly. This is Krishna speaking to Lord Brahma. The highest devotion is attained by slow degrees, by the method of constant endeavor for self-realization, with the help of scriptural evidence, theistic conduct, and perseverance in practice. It gets better. These preliminary practices of devotion, sadhana bhakti, are conducive to the realization of loving devotion. Loving devotion, than whom there is no superior well-being, who goes hand in hand with the attainment of the exclusive state of supreme bliss, and who can lead to myself. Final. Abandoning all meritorious performances. Sounds familiar, right? 1866. Serve me with faith. The realization will correspond to the nature of one's faith. The people of the world act ceaselessly in pursuance of some ideal by meditating on me. By means of those deeds, one will obtain devotion characterized by love in the shape of the supreme service. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati explains, here's how you do the balance program. join those activities with your core activities of devotional practice, and then those activities also become spiritual. And they serve to elevate the soul as strongly as the direct devotional activities. As I mentioned the first day, when you use your time properly in Krishna's service, both time and matter serve to spiritualize your life. So connect or join or dovetail, bring the worldly into the house of bhakti. And then it's not then time will act differently. And matter will act differently. And the dilemma will be greatly reduced. And I'll just, because I've been going too long, I'm going to end a little bit earlier this morning with just a final point or two. Okay, that sounds really interesting. Now, take a look at my life. I have to work so many hours a day. And I start dividing up, you know, my day. And I just had this discussion yesterday with some devotees. Where's the time? Very interesting theory. Where's the time? Help me understand, where's the time? So, there's certainly just to repeat, one thing is without question. The core activities of devotion go in first, and we parse up the time. And then you, under guidance of someone who's experienced, just like Prabhupada writes all the time, we read some of these, under the guidance of persons who understand how to use time and understand the teachings of devotion and applying the teachings of devotion, in consultation with them, under their guidance, you figure out a nifty schedule that, okay, so much for sleeping, so much for bathing, so much for eating, so much I must spend with my family, so much for work. You know, if you do it that way, then where's the time for chanting? You do the time for hearing and chanting first, and then there's a certain amount of other, you know, the rest of the day. And you make blocks of time, and then you follow the blocks of time system, where each activity, like this discussion last night about worshiping Radha Kalachanji, each activity is done where you're fully concentrating on that activity. You're not multi-processing multiple activities while you're doing each activity. Then you're not present. Be fully present with each activity. When you're chanting, that's our most important activity, isn't it? You're doing one thing, not doing multiple things. One thing. And you practice like that, and then the next thing and the next thing will help you. Just be very, very present. And then keep the regulation. That required, like we read yesterday, this description of Narada in his previous life. He was disciplined. Even he was a small boy, he was disciplined. So we need a little discipline if we keep regulated. And if you, what's the use of making a schedule that you don't follow? Keep a schedule. Make a schedule that's sensible and follow it. And there's always going to be something, but it's the guiding post to get you back to, you know, to plan A. Being very regulated. And regulated will help promote you. Regulation helps promote goodness. Note, that means less passion and less ignorance. Regulation. Each thing is for Krishna. Each thing has its time. And when the time is over, I move on to the next thing. And then when that time is over, I move on. And just very, very, very present. Something that I've learned from a few years of devotional service is, if you chant sincerely, Krishna gives you more service. And when, what do you do with more service when you're already packed with service? It's a challenge, but it's service. You've asked for it, Krishna gave it. And there's always the situation, my experience is, you have more service to do. I'm sure Nityananda Pran was speaking about this yesterday. More service to do than you have time to do. Yes? It's always like that. So what do? You pray to Krishna and try to be more Krishna conscious, and gradually you start to get so you can kind of handle the extra service, and the next thing you know, there's more service. And there's always more to do than you have time to do. Get used to it. It's probably like that in the spiritual world too. There's more time, that you need more time. Even their time is eternal. That sense of wishing to serve Krishna nicely. So the balance is each thing that you do, you've contemplated, you made a schedule for it, and you do it with full attention. And you're receiving guidance from someone that understands these principles. And you're accountable to that someone that understands these principles. So you're not just like off on your own in la-la land. You're accountable to someone. And you're striving and stay regulated. You know, specifically, avoid the mode of passion. The mode of passion will try to creep in and say something. You know, sometimes it says it really loudly. Avoid that. And the mode of ignorance is also time-wasting. Avoid that mode also. And then there's the transcendental position where, along with the regulation, for whom are you doing this regulation? Is it just so you can get everything done? That sounds a little bit like passion. It's for the pleasure of Guru and Krishna. And that's the shelter that carries you through the pressures upon your time and staying fixed on doing this in proper consciousness, where you approach eternal devotional service, the realm of, that's our goal, eternal service to Krishna. So stay focused in that way. And one last point. I'll use two terms. One is nivritti, and another term, nice Western term, is fulcrum. So our process is a process of nivritti. What does nivritti mean? Nivritti means progressively decreasing one's involvement with matter. In part, that's done by spiritualizing. But in part, it's also done by just doing without, simplicity. Doing without a lot of stuff. Just what you need is fine. Like Prabhupada was describing. You can look it up later. It's Bhagavad Gita chapter 10, text number 4, where he's speaking about Samma Dhamma. And there's a certain amount of what the senses need. The goal is not zero. The goal is necessity. And then not more than necessity. Excess beyond necessity puts a negative, it dampens the fire of devotion. So, not excessive. Necessity. And then as far as necessity, look to decrease that which I think is necessary. Not artificially, but look progressively to decrease involvement. So another way of saying the same is a fulcrum. So now this is balance. This is our topic. Time management 101, balance. So over on this side is my involvements in matter. And over on this side is my hearing and chanting. And, you know, so you need a proper balance. Always consider how to move the fulcrum in such a way where there's, you put more weight on this side, on the hearing and chanting side, and the sense of necessity over in that side diminishes. I had somebody prepare a little, like a digital image that showed like this. Here's the balance. You put a strong force over here, hearing and chanting. And then, you know, my necessities just become lighter. The other side goes up. And the opposite works. You slacken in your hearing and chanting. And what you think is necessary, you can't do without it. You can't be peaceful without it. Becomes heavier. And always be looking to move the fulcrum. That point of balance changes when you gradually, your life becomes spiritualized. Necessities diminish. And including necessities of time. You know, the time spent worrying about things, the time spent planning things, the time spent, you know, with the material energy. Except when there's something about expanding the process of hearing and chanting. I've been listening for the second time again now to the Prowling Srila Prabhupada DVD series that Yadubar presented. And it sounds like Govinda Dasi's voice. She described that Prabhupada was regularly be looking at the globe and spinning the globe. And he would say, you know, Gaurasundar should go to Japan. And, you know, Bali Mardan should go to Australia, and he'd spin the globe. And somebody should go to Germany. And he was always thinking, there's a purport in Bhagavad Gita in which Prabhupada says, one of the ways to control the mind is to always be contemplating how to expand the flow of Lord Chaitanya's mercy, expand the movement of Lord Chaitanya. Certainly Prabhupada was engaged in that way. And who could say that they're busier than Prabhupada? You know, the list of things. It's like 15 people that are super CEOs. And, you know, he was empowered by Krishna because of his devotion to Krishna. And somehow there was time for everything. I mean, look at when you see the correspondence, and when Prabhupada received correspondence and when he replied. How did he do it? I mean, we have email avalanche, and, you know, how do you keep up with it? I can't keep up with it. But it's so... exclusive devotion to Krishna is the only way. And then time acts differently. And it's not just, you know, so householders and sannyasis and brahmacharis. Don't think that our brahmacharis, some householders think, oh, the brahmacharis, they have all day long. Ask the brahmacharis. And then you may think, oh, the sannyasis, you know. Yes, there's this element of discretionary power that we don't have to go to work 8 to 12 hours a day. But we do other things 8 to 12 hours a day, and there's certainly the matter of time management involved in our lives. So ashram specific, it's different, but the principle is the same. I'll just read the verse again, translation, see if there's any questions. Remember, this is a chatrasloki verse of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. A person who is searching after the supreme absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, most certainly must search for it up to this, in all circumstances, in all space and time, and both directly and indirectly. Okay, so any comments or questions? Yes?
And chanting.
Good. Glad.
So I've noticed when I try to take steps toward improving the quality or quantity of hearing and chanting in my daily schedule, that sometimes there are tests that press, challenge that attempt to increase the, let's say, time and I spend hearing, or just blocks of chanting. So how to properly exercise intelligence of when, no, I will hear no matter what at this time, versus this is an extreme circumstance, so maybe today I shuffle things around.
Well, I'll say two things. One is, Prabhupada, in his Bhagavad Gita purport, speaks of prescribed duty, emergency duty, and discretionary activity. So there are circumstances when you have to go to plan B instead of plan A. Your question is, so it's there are circumstances as part of the answer or response, but, you know, how are you supposed to make the measure? So now the second part is, a little common sense helps. And, to help one guide one's common sense, having some guiding person to say, you know, in a circumstance like this, how should I evaluate? Is this an example of an emergency where I should go to plan B? Or is this an example where I should just tolerate and stay with plan A? So I'm an advocate of receiving guidance, because that's what our scripture teaches us. And practical experience teaches us. How's that? Someone else? Donna Kelly in the back.
I have a question about the efficient use of our time and life and balancing things. Say like two people get introduced to Krishna consciousness and they are both studying Srila Prabhupada's books, and so they're hearing the same urgent message.
I like the picture so far.
So they're hearing the same urgent message about how we should use our life in Krishna's service. They're chanting the same Maha Mantra. Perhaps they have the same spiritual master. But one of them chooses to not keep in their life things that they would be required to spiritualize and balance with their direct devotional activities. But the other person chooses to keep in their life a number of things that they're going to be required to expend energy, time, etc., to spiritualize so that they can come to the platform of just having devotional services in their life. So what's the difference between those two persons? I mean, they're both hearing the same urgent message, engaging in chanting, etc., etc., but one chooses a more efficient path to devotional service, and one chooses a little less efficient path.
Can I ask a question from your, before I respond? Are both of them equally receptive to receiving guidance?
Well, I'm going to assume.
Okay. So that helps to answer the question. Let's go to Canto 1, Chapter 9, Bhishma Dev's instructions to Yudhisthira, where he Bhishma Deva is describing how a person is to be trained. And he uses, at the end of that, there's one very curious verse where Bhishma Deva uses this enigmatic phrase, counteraction by detachment and interaction by attachment. Remember that one? So what Prabhupada explains in the purport is, he gives the example of, like you're giving, you know, same teacher, two students, they're trained initially in same principles, like character. And in the course of time, the teacher, the guru, sees one is inclined in an attached way. One is inclined in a detached way. Both continue in the character aspect of their life, but then one may be seeing the nature, encouraged, to act according to their nature of detachment, and then act according to their nature of attachment. But then, you know, guidance is different for both, and the form that their life takes may be a little different. But what's essential is, well, two things. Proper guidance and recognition of the nature of the individual. So, as long as there's proper guidance and there's willingness to receive guidance, then it's just, you know, one flower grows this way and another flower grows that way, and they're fine. They're flowers. But if there's lack of willingness to receive guidance, then I start adding things and try to like figure out how to like spiritualize those things. It can lead one away from the path of purity, of, you know, becoming purified by doing so. Without proper guidance, it becomes an entanglement, and it takes one further away from becoming pure in devotion. But so different persons have different natures, and that's perfectly fine. Let me take your question and apply it, raise it, or speak about it in a different way. Something that, from my vantage point of my service, that's kind of an issue that comes up in devotee families is parents wishing their children to go in a certain direction towards something, like studies and career and stuff like that. For a variety of reasons. I mean, you know, vicariously wishing that they could fulfill what they were unable to fulfill. That's one of them. Or, you know, we worked very hard and sacrificed and you've had everything, you don't know what it's like. That's one of those. And you don't know because you're young, but when you're older, you'll need certain sets of things. And so you need to don't go that way, go this way. But, you know, rather than the other model, which is seeing the nature, this other model that's described by Bhishma Deva, seeing their nature, and according to the nature. I was discussing this with the family just yesterday. Seeing what the nature is, and then placing the resources that can help fulfill that nature and guide how those resources are to be utilized towards being a complete person and feeling fully satisfied, and then, but you know, with Krishna as the goal, pleasing Krishna as the goal. So that's what, you know, that I'm now I'm addressing like the qualification of the person guiding. Your question was not that. Your question was, what's the difference between these two people? That's why I wanted to know, are they like open for good guidance? So that's the first thing that those individuals need to like look inside. And am I open to guidance, or am I so much attached to my independence that I'm just going to read books and do it and not so much receive guidance? So then I got my filter. Even when I'm reading the book, I've got my filters on. What comes in is what agrees with me, my conceptions. And the other stuff just doesn't enter through my filter. And now I'm Krishna conscious. And what's wrong with my Krishna consciousness? What's wrong? You know, you got a problem with my Krishna consciousness? I'm being Krishna conscious. Look at, here's the standard. Here's my filters, and here's what came in, and I'm doing it. So it's essential that one is able to receive. It's essential that there is proper guidance. And then the combination of the two allows for personalism. Different persons are different. So let the garden grow with all kinds of variety, and that's nice. That's really what's natural. Okay? You have more.
Just a small follow-up then.
Okay.
So then what causes one person to be attached and one person detached when they're hearing the same, say, urgent message from Prabhupada? Why doesn't that urgent message just like knock our socks off and make us... Why one is detached after hearing and one's not attached?
No.
Or one is attached, rather.
We're persons. We're individuals. And, you know, so part of it is just personal, and part of it is their spiritual trajectory has gone this far from previous life, another one has gone that far from previous life, and someone can let more light in, and someone can let less light in, but that's okay. One can, that's less light in person can, you know, properly guided, they can continue to progress. It's not a race. You know, there's a win-lose program here. It's a win, and everyone should win. And the best way to win is recognize my situation and continue to move in a way that's sustainable. If the one that has a greater attachment tries to imitate or compete with the one that has less attachment, it's not sustainable. And they'll have a problem somewhere down the road. So the proper guidance, self-honesty, being willing to make the next step or two towards, you know, the goal. Different natures, different position, different requirements. Diversity is beautiful. Not bad, it's beautiful. Jai Jagannath.
Maharaj, I was wondering how much should the understanding which you have given us today be imposed upon children?
Imposed?
I know that word may not be the... That word doesn't create a good feeling.
No, it doesn't.
But the reason I'm using that word is because in the secular world, a lot of things are imposed upon children, which they actually like because of the tendency for the soul for sense enjoyment. You know, video games and etc.
Yeah.
It's imposed upon them, the sex, the violence, the movies, the nonsense. And due to the nature of the enjoying soul, he doesn't mind it. He doesn't see it as an imposition. He actually likes it, but it's actually being imposed upon them. So then on the side of the devotees' families, it has some relationship to me also. I'm going to get to that part also.
Okay.
On the side of the devotees' families, they don't want to impose
Krishna consciousness
because then what if their children don't like it and then that will create a negative feeling. They won't want to take it up in the future. But at the same time, they may be allowing their children to acquiesce to the, you know, the impositions of the modern world. And then what happens is when we're dealing with the youth, we try to give similar messages, which just don't, oh, let's say our little 2 hours of discussion versus their 60 hours or the 80 hours per week of the other stuff, then there is not a balance at all.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make me feel this way internally, because I just see that we have certain duties, but sometimes the thought does come up, what's the point in trying? What is my 2 hours of blabbering on and on and on going to do next to their 80 hours of engagement in things which are actually not at all Christian conscious? And the parents don't want to impose Christian consciousness onto the children, making a bad taste for them. And at the same time, they may allow them to be involved with a lot of the nonsense without cutting them down. Making the job of course, their job harder to make their children Christian conscious, and also those who try to mentor their children difficult. I hope that I'm not trying to be controversial.
No!
But it is a genuine concern, because
of course
I sometimes feel like, why try? You know, why try? It's just like 2 hours blabbering versus their 80 hours of other stuff.
Well, you know, those of you that are not brahmacharis, you're hearing the voice of a brahmachari. And please be aware that the brahmachari voice, it's not like, hey, I'm brahmachari, see you guys later. The brahmachari is part of us, as, you know, the householders are part of us, as, you know, the brahmacharis are part of us from the perspective of the householders. And, you know, the brahmachari sees that he has a role to play with the congregation. I'm not just going to respond specific, not like, you know, the college students that don't have devotee parents, but specific to the brahmachari interacting with the children of our community. Or a sannyasi who is interacting with the youth and children of our community. Or the parents of that are themselves wishing to be more on the hearing and chanting side and the pravritti side, and, you know, a little less on the involvement in, using his word, the nonsense side, where, you know, there's indulgences in stuff because, well, the kids, you know, we don't want to impose on them. It's complex. When, you know, it's one thing, what I do myself is one thing, and how I interact with others that have a different standard in life is another thing. I certainly would not advise parents to impose, but I certainly would advise parents to maximize the favorable environment by their own example. And they're, you know, making an atmosphere where the spiritual garden grows very nicely, and we have a practice of not growing weeds along with our spiritual garden. The creeper of bhakti doesn't have lots of weeds all over the place that we're also watering regularly. We remove those weeds, you know, as an example. And, you know, because you're probably involved in this a lot too, but I am involved in a lot helping parents understand how to deal with when their children or children who their children interact with, or, you know, the parents of those children who their children interact with, how to deal with the curiosity factor or the water seeks the lowest level principle. Children like to do whatever other children do that's nonsense. And it's just natural. The water seeks the lowest level. It's the same works with children. And it's abundantly available. So why don't we go there? So now, more specific to your question is, we're servants. So we can't be with everybody you know, 80 hours a day. We can be with some people, some part of the day or the week. And that's the service that we can do. And as much as, or proportionate to, their willingness to receive transcendence and then make decisions based upon the wisdom that they receive, so they go the path of vritti or not, if that's the decision that they're going to make. We're just offering the alternative and an atmosphere that's conducive for that alternative. And that's what we do. And, you know, it's a big world. There's a lot of people in this world that aren't practicing Krishna consciousness. And there's nothing but nonsense. And then there's some persons that have an attraction for, you know, a little Krishna consciousness and a lot of nonsense. And then, you know, progressively more, you know, more Krishna consciousness and less, I'm just using your word, nonsense. You know, distracting activities, time-wasting activities and polluting activities, because that's the atmosphere in which we find ourselves. So gradually, largely on the basis of the relationship that we have with those that are, that have spiritual inclination, we, brahmacharis and sannyasis and householders that are, you know, wishing to go progressively toward Krishna, we have a role to play of, through the relationship with those persons, in nurturing and encouraging the attraction for Krishna through our association, through our devotion, through our hearing and chanting with them, through our extending care to them, and, you know, through our bhakti, drawing the, fanning the bhakti spark into a little flame, and that flame into a blaze. That's our service. And we're not the controllers. We're servants. We do that service to our capacity, praying to Krishna for greater capacity, and fan the sparks. And whatever comes of it, that's between that person and Krishna. And I'm doing my service to Krishna. Wishing, praying, and leaving the results up to Krishna. Someone else.
What does it mean by congratulations?
What does it mean by? You read the purport. It's first canto, chapter 9, but you look for that verse. And in the, it's the last part of the purport where the boy goes to the school, the gurukul. The teacher trains the boys, all boys, in the same standards of character. He doesn't use exactly that language, but building character. And then being qualified, he sees this one is inclined this way. So, like a really qualified teacher has lots of skill, and he can train this one towards this activity, and that one towards that activity. That's the varna part. And then comes the ashram part. And someone may be inclined for detachment. So counteraction by detachment. You just continue in being a detached brahmachari and remain brahmachari. And then another of his students in his ashram, he sees is inclined towards the attachment side. Counteraction by attachment. So prescribed way of entering into household life and doing that, being trained to properly enter, and then having entered, continual guidance and training how to properly execute the duties through, although in an attached possible, but you know, the situation of attachment will grow, but then neutralizing that or minimizing that by interaction with the objects that one may be attached to. See the Prabhupada.